singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, blow, rockin' Robin, what we really gonna rock up tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree. The wise old owl, the big black crow, flap of their wings, sing and go, bird, go. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. And that music means our friends from the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center are here. And we are thrilled to see in studio with us today Jessie Eckrode. She's the Outreach Program Coordinator, and also Delaney Osmond. She is an intern with Carpenter, and we're so excited to get caught up and chat it up with you both. How have you been?
Very good. Very busy. Mm-hmm. Very sweaty with all of our running around, especially today.
I can't imagine. So we're coming off of your big grand opening at your Wisconsin campus. Tell us about that, please.
You know what? I actually was involved with a lot of the planning parts of the
And then you were out of town.
But then I was out of town. So I'll leave it to Delaney to comment on some of the activities for our grand opening weekend, because I actually wasn't there, sadly. So Delaney, what was going on?
Yeah, from start to finish, it was a super exciting weekend. There was, like, major turnout. The ribbon cutting, the entire driveway, the entire parking lot was packed to the brim. So many people were involved and so many people were excited. And it was great to see so many people happy and visiting over the weekend.
And this was the opening of your visitor center, which was a long time in coming.
Absolutely. Yep. So we, for Hastings residents, they know that we've been operating a facility just north of town here for 40 years now, and we've had a visitor center and facilities on that campus for many years. But we also have property just south of Hudson in Wisconsin, and until recently, we didn't have any facilities, but we've been wanting to build a visitor center for 30-plus years, and there have been a
30,
lot of...
I guess I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, we've had the property for 35 years now, or we've been working on acquiring property over there for 35 years, and some of our board members have been with us for that long and have been working on this process for that amount of time, and so it really is a dream come true for a lot of people. It's very exciting to be involved in this next phase.
And it is named after some people that were very instrumental in making this dream come true.
Absolutely. We named it the Al and Lori Hine Visitor Center because it was the Hines that donated the original 80-some acre parcel of property.
That got the ball rolling.
Yes, exactly. So the property and then funds to help us out. And then over the course of time, neighbors, community partners helped us to acquire additional land around that original parcel. And we now operate 300 acres over there.
Oh, my gosh. That is just great.
We think so, too.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
and
you.
Tell us the hours of that as well. They're slightly different, aren't they, then?
It's slightly different for trail access.
Oh,
but
yes.
The visitor center and parking, same hours as our Minnesota campus, 8 to 4:30 daily. But over there, the trails are accessible from sunrise to sunset.
So I know that you actually brought in a little cage of something that doesn't look ferocious, and I'm all for it.
Yes, you seemed very relieved.
I'm very relieved that this is something that I can wrap my head around. I'm all for what you brought in.
Yes, and you know, it's kind of unfortunate to go from talking about the good news of our grand opening to the unfortunate
terrible news
related to our little animal guest that we brought. We have a monarch chrysalis here. So that's the pupa stage. It's the little green, seemingly inanimate object hanging from a leaf here, but that's a very important stage of the monarch life cycle. And the sad news is that recently monarchs were listed as being endangered.
Did you see that coming?
Oh boy. You know, I'm a bit of a pessimist in that regard, so yes. But you know, and anecdotally, I think especially over the course of the last 10 or 15 years, I've seen a decrease. I'm not as many butterflies as we used to see, definitely.
And what is that caused by?
multiple factors, but to distill it down, it's basically habitat loss and climate change related issues. So monarchs overwinter in California and in Mexico. And in those areas, they need these conifer forest areas where they existing a kind of state of stasis or kind of hibernation there. They rest over the course of the winter. So they need that type of habitat there. And then when they come north for breeding during the summer months, they need lots and lots of milkweed. And unfortunately, milkweed is just not as abundant as it used to be for climate change reasons, but also because of things like pesticide use as well. So their food source is going away. Monarchs rely exclusively on different species of milkweed to survive. And so if we don't have very much milkweed, that's not good for the caterpillars and the adult butterflies.
So that really is a serious thing that they're on the endangered list. Do animals or butterflies ever come off the endangered list?
Yes, they do. Okay. So what is wonderful is that even though we humans do a lot of oopsies, we make bad decisions sometimes that are not good for the environment, we are also capable of making changes. So a very good example of an animal that was actually nearly extinct, or what's called extirpated, in North America, and a perfect example of that is the peregrine falcon. We almost lost our entire population of peregrine falcons in North America at one point, but thanks to conservation efforts, they are now delisted. They are not considered endangered anymore. Many states still kind of have them on their watch lists to make sure that we're still monitoring their populations and being careful, but that's a perfect example of how we can make positive change.
And so can we do our part by perhaps planting milkweed in our backyard? Does that help?
It certainly can. So one thing to be mindful of for folks that do want to do milkweed planting is to make sure as much as possible that the seed they're planting had been collected locally. Because if you are planting species of milkweed that might be very beautiful but are more tropical, that kind of goofs with the monarch's life process. If the monarchs that are here are used to encountering and ingesting certain species of milkweed, but all of a sudden they're encountering tropical species, that's not good. So to the best of your ability, planting native species is the best.
Do you sell them over at Carpenter?
We don't sell them, but oftentimes we do public programming where we give seed away.
Okay, because that's maybe how I got mine. I got mine from yours, so hopefully I'm helping out in some regard.
Absolutely, and I applaud every individual who does their best to make change in their yard, whether that's planting a prairie patch or even just putting seeds in the garden for those milkweed plants. But at the end of the day, what we really need to do is make bigger change. So speaking to your local legislators to enact policies to protect habitats, regulate pesticide use and things like that, that's where big change is going to happen. And that's the level at which we need to be taking action.
So some people might be listening and they think, what do I care if the monarchs aren't around anymore? What do you say to them?
Well, I say everything in nature is connected.
Yes.
Including us humans. We're animals too.
Right.
So if there are animals like the monarch caterpillars or different species of amphibians or reptiles or birds that are struggling, that's an indicator that there are big problems in the environment that at the end of the day not only affect animals but affect humans too. Definitely.
Well said. Well said. So, Jesse, tell us more about this actual chrysalis that I'm looking at. It looks like, I'm going to make a observation, it looks like a big, like a contact pill that you would take if you were sick and had a cold. You wanted to sleep.
I call them horse pills.
Exactly.
That great big antibiotic you have to take
exactly.
If you get sick.
But it looks like something, I mean, it's about that size.
Yep.
And it's hanging from a green leaf. Is that a milkweed that it's hanging from?
It is. It's okay. Hanging from the stem of a milkweed plant. So the chrysalis, I have never heard it described as looking like a pill, but that is a really good description as far as the size is concerned. They're this beautiful kind of lime green color, and they blend in very well
no
to the environment. So they're very unassuming looking. but they're very pretty. This is the third out of four stages in the life cycle. Well, five if you count the egg. So as with all insects, they start their life as an egg and then hatch from the egg and are a caterpillar. Then that's their...
Okay, what now? So who lays the egg?
The adult butterflies do. Oh, that's why. Okay. Yeah, this is why it's referred to as a life cycle.
The adult butterfly lays the egg, and then the egg becomes... I'm trying to remember my The Very Hungry Caterpillar, how it all works.
Yes.
Okay, because that's such a great book.
It is. Yeah. It's actually pretty scientifically accurate as well.
Not the part about he eats, like, strawberries and...
Well, not in the case of monarch caterpillars, certainly. Okay. But they start their life as an egg. They grow within the egg and emerge as a caterpillar. That's the larva stage.
Okay.
They grow, become bigger over time, those caterpillars. And like in the Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar, they just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat all day until they reach a certain size.
Okay.
At which time they prepare to become a chrysalis. So at that time, what they do is they, using their little caterpillar butts, spin a little bit of silk to attach themselves to hang upside down from a branch. Their body forms a little J. And at that time, their skin actually splits open, and the chrysalis is their exoskeleton that's on the inside underneath their skin. And that is the pupa stage.
So that's an inside-out caterpillar?
In a way. Insect biology is kind of strange, and it's hard for us to understand because they don't have bones on the inside of their bodies like you and I do. They have what's called an exoskeleton. And all insects, over time, as they grow, they actually shed their exoskeleton because it gets too tight. So they're growing a new skin underneath that. They shed it off. So what you see of that caterpillar, they have just kind of like a squishy, leathery exoskeleton, just their skin.
Okay.
But underneath, they're starting to form the structure that's that chrysalis. So when the time comes, they shed their skin. Their chrysalis, the outer part, becomes the new skin. And on the inside, then, all that development is happening for the adult butterfly. And then the chrysalis will split open and the adult emerges.
So what does that caterpillar look like? Because I'm thinking about fuzzy caterpillars that I see this time of year that are, let's say, maroon and black.
Sure. Those are the woolly bear caterpillars. Yes. I'm glad you asked what monarch caterpillars look like, because I actually have a picture of one right here. This is the promotion for our Carpenter Art Festival, which is coming up, and the monarch caterpillars and butterflies are kind of the mascot. Monarch caterpillars are the really vibrantly striped black, white, and yellow caterpillars that you see that I describe as kind of being naked. They don't have fuzzies like a lot of other types of caterpillars do.
So what do those fuzzy caterpillars turn into?
Many of them turn into moths.
Ugh, they're so much prettier as a caterpillar.
Depends on the species. There's some very beautiful types of moths, and this is coming from somebody that's kind of creeped out by moths because I don't like them flying into my hair when I'm trying to get into my house at night and they're fluttering around the porch light. But butterflies and moths are both really amazing animals for a lot of reasons.
So this chrysalis will be in this stage for how long?
It's around, I want to say, if I'm remembering correctly, it's something like 15 days.
And then what will happen?
Well, like I said, we know that the adult is ready to emerge and that chrysalis will split open for the adult to emerge. We'll know the adult is ready to emerge when actually the chrysalis starts to turn kind of clear, and it will turn dark because it's revealing the dark colors of the butterfly that's inside. So you know that they're about to emerge when it starts to turn kind of clear and dark, and then the butterfly emerges from there.
So as far as these butterflies go, isn't there some butterflies or some monarchs that are super, they have like a superpower or something? What am I trying to think?
Yes, no, I love that question, and I think I know where you're going with that. One of the things that's incredible about the adult monarchs is that the ones that have just kind of emerged and become adults this time of year here in Minnesota,
yes,
will make a migration of nearly 3,000 miles to get to their overwintering grounds. And then They overwinter, and when they kind of wake up during the spring, they will then begin to fly north, but they don't come all the way up north. Their life ends part way on their journey, but they lay eggs, and there's a generation then that is born. And then they kind
in
of
where, like St. Louis or something?
So, no, more down near like Texas, let's say. Okay. And then there's this next generation then that flies up a little bit farther, produces a new generation, which then flies up a little bit farther. There's actually three generations of butterflies that it takes to make that full cycle. And that's part of the reason they're so vulnerable to habitat issues, is because that life cycle is so wonderfully complex. It's also very fragile.
So the ones that are being born now are the superstars.
Yes, they are the, I think they actually do call them the super generation. That's not even just a fancy, silly word for it. I believe that's the actual technical term, is that they're the super generation, that generation that flies all the way south.
So if we see a chrysalis, we should just admire it from a distance. And
that is the best thing to do. I know lots of folks like to collect caterpillars and raise them, but there's many things that can happen and go wrong with that life cycle. It's best to just leave them out side and admire them from afar, and then just kind of wave at the adult when they emerge and wish them luck on their way to Mexico.
They're so beautiful.
They are.
Tell us some more about this event that's going to be on August 20th, please.
Certainly. And I'm actually going to hand that over to Delaney, because, boy, I feel like I've just been blah about butterflies. So I'm happy to turn it over to her,
Delaney,
to chat about the art festival.
Tell us about the art festival.
Yeah. So the Carpenter Art Festival is happening on August 20th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's featuring a lot of local artists whose work is based on nature. And from what I've seen so far from previous years, it's going to be amazing. I cannot believe how many talented people that they have coming. And we have a lot of vendors and music and food as well. So it's not just art. It's going to be a really big event, and I'm excited to attend. So I hope other people are just as excited as I am.
Well, I am very excited for that as well. So when you say different kinds of art, what is it? Paintings? Is it photography?
We have painting, photography, ceramics.
Oh, wow.
Woodworking.
Textile art, people who do hand-dyed fabrics. I really want to go to that booth.
Yes, they're jewelry makers too. There's a little something for everyone. And one of the coolest things that I love about this event is that it's held on kind of the rustic north end of our Wisconsin campus.
The bowl.
Yes. And so, you know, the new visitor center is actually located on the south end, but this is going to continue to take place on the north end at 300 East Coast Road. Free and open to the public for you to come and to join.
Wonderful.
And a small portion of proceeds from all of the artist sales comes right back to Carpenter Nature Center to support habitat conservation and also environmental education. And special this year, in honor of our monarch friends, we will have a special monarch education booth.
Well, I've learned a lot, so thank you for educating our listeners as well. We want to thank Jessie Eckrode. She's the Outreach Program Coordinator, and Delaney Osmond. She is one of the interns at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, and always great things going on. Thank you for all that you are doing to educate people, because I think the more we're educated, the more we can understand nature and really appreciate the beauty of it. Great to see you both. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.
Rock and Robin, tweet, 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 twe